Hi there, I'm Ankara Savelle.
And I'm Shauna Lane, and we're the Gone Girls.
Come listen to our podcast, The Gone Girls, on the Paperhouse Network.
We're two comedians based out of New York City, and we podcast bi-weekly or whenever we feel like it.
Need to figure out life? Us too. And we do it by interviewing anyone. We dive in deep with comics, improvisers, club managers, doctors, wait staff, mostly from the comfort of Shauna's Subaru.
We are trying to figure out how to get through this thing called life with our senses of humor intact.
Join the Gone Girls on the Paperhouse Network.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the New York Comedy Club podcast, brought to you in part by the Paperhouse Network. I am your host, Nick Angelo, and joined today via phone, the very funny and good friend of mine, Dave Cyrus. Dave, how are you, buddy? How are you feeling?
Good. I wish I could be there in person. I petitioned to. I take it personally. You didn't let me.
Yeah, sorry. I don't want you to get corona shamed, as that is now a thing. God forbid you actually have encounters with anybody and your entire name gets ran through the dirt because you saw somebody in person.
And I support it. I think shaming is long overdue. I think shame is a really underutilized tool in America these days.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I remember the good old days when you would lose weight because people said you were fat. You know, whatever happened to that?
I certainly did. I think a lot of people have had their lives saved by Karen Feehan alone.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point. I think she should start using that as her tag, lifesaver. I had you on the episodes because last time you were with us, it was about last summer. You had pretty much just wrapped up the movie that you were making with Judd Apatow. You and Pete Davidson had wrote it and produced it. And you were really excited about it. And, you know, the episode was great. I really enjoyed talking to you about it. I was getting excited for the movie, and
I wasn't that excited, but
you were elite. Well, you sold it well enough to me, and you were supposed to debut the film at South by Southwest, correct? This past,
yes.
What?
Yes, it was going to be at South by, which if I had to take a wild guess, I don't think there's going to be a South by next year anyway.
Oh, really?
Year after that, definitely. But, if I had to guess, I don't think things coming back that fast. But, yeah, it was going to be the opening of South by Southwest, and South by was the first major event to be canceled, basically. So, my movie was at the forefront of things getting canceled. We were ahead of the curve.
Well, how about that? That's cool. Good for you. I guess, congratulations when you can take it nowadays. But when was it? That was February?
It was going to be March 13th.
March.
March 13th was the premiere date. That was the first day of South By. It was also where they were going to have the releases of that Beastie Boys movie I'm really excited about, RZA's movie. It was going to be quite the event.
I'm glad you brought up some hip-hop because we're going to get into that a little bit later, but that's a little foreshadowing. But so now what? What do you guys do now? What are you and Pete and Judd doing now? Are you just kind of waiting for the theatrical release? Has that been postponed? Like, what's the plan? Are you guys in limbo?
I can't say exactly what's going to happen. The movie is going to be released. It's really going to be in line with what the general movie industry does, which is, and you know, so I can't speak for what's going to happen to our movie specifically yet, but I believe that what's going to happen is certain movies are going to be released online and certain movies are going to be held until theaters exist again. We really have no idea when that is, though. So if I had to guess, I'd say that, you know, movies like Wonder Woman or, you know, are going to wait to try to get their money back, but that a lot of other movies are probably just going to go directly to what they're doing now, like Trolls and the other movies that were in theaters already. That's what I'm guessing is going to happen, but it's really up to the studios. That's not really something that, you know, I'm going to be that much of a voice on. That's a lot of big decisions they have to make. You know, we're talking about, you know, billions of dollars, at risk. So they're just trying to, you know, not you know, just do whatever's best in terms of, you know, you can't just wait either. You can't just wait a year and not have movies come out. So, you know, as long as people get to see it, that's what matters. And they will one way or the other.
Well, that's good to know. I mean, like I said, last time we were talking about the movie, you did a pretty good job of just talking about the movie in general, kind of got me fired up because it is featuring a lot of comedians that we know. I remember you talking about Derek Gaines and Paul Verzey were in the movie. They did a really good job. Of course, Bill Burr was in it. I've been patiently waiting for this movie to come out, and I was a little upset that the debut got postponed like everything else did in the world. Has anyone reached out to you or anything like that about like, you know, they're also upset that it's not coming out? Or, I mean, how's Pete doing? How's Judd doing, you know?
No one's really complaining about that. You know, there's just much bigger things to worry about right now because, I mean, listen, it's going to come out one way or the other. And the important thing is that, you know, whatever happens, it's no longer my fault.
You've completely, literally and figuratively washed your hands of the situation.
Yeah, look, it's either way, people are going to have the ability to see the movie. You know, I just can't say yet if the, you know, exactly how that's going to be or when. But, you know, they'll announce that fairly soon. So either way, you will be able to see that, to see this movie, and it's not going to be, and I'm pretty sure it's not going to be, you know, years from now. I'm confident people will be able to see the movie in a reasonable amount of time that we were expecting them to.
Well, that is a relief. And it has a title now. I remember last time you said you could not speak of the title, and it since has come out, correct?
It is officially The King of Staten Island.
The King of Staten Island. I liked what J.P. McDade said last time, the Avengers Staten Island. I thought that was a good ring to it as well. But yeah, The King of Staten Island.
Yeah, that's, you know, I'll be in the company of all those other King movies.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I didn't even think about that.
You get to be in that section of Blockbuster.
Yes.
King of Scotland, Pope of Greenwich Village for some reason.
Yeah. yes, the King and I, the Tiger King, and the King of Staten Island are all now together at last.
King of Kong.
Yes, that's yeah. There it is. So I mean, what have you been doing, man? Like, this is, I know this seems like such a dumb question, but it literally is like, there's, you know, what have you been doing? How you been holding up? Or what are you doing to keep your sanity? Have you been writing? Have you been just watching? Like, what's up, man? What have you been up to?
Well, I have had some writing to do. Not much of it, like, official stuff. But there's, like, a lot of stuff you can get done, you know, on spec and in preliminary things, you know. So there's a few projects I've been working on. Hopefully we'll, you know, move along, and because this is the time to write stuff. So I've been fairly busy, so that's not bad. There's, you know, multiple, like, I honestly don't know what I'm allowed to talk about, but there was a TV show that was in the works before that is still, you know, going to happen eventually. There are some other movies that, you know, I'm just in very, very early stages of thinking about, trying to work on, stuff like that. So at least I've had stuff to do. I've been cooking a lot, which is something I already did, but, you know, that's at least something that's, you know, something to fill your time, because I'm not getting takeout. I don't know what is up with people who are just trusting takeout or delivery food. And I have an Oculus, so I've been killing a lot of zombies and boxing. Oculus boxing. It's okay.
Okay.
Because I'm quarantining alone, so, you know, it's embarrassing how little it's changed my lifestyle.
So not much to change. You're just washing your hands more.
Well, not really, because I'm home. You don't have to wash your hands if you don't leave the house.
That's a fair point. Yeah, so I mean, you're not even like leaving the house at all. I mean, you're doing the very, very bare minimum of leaving the house.
Well, I mean, I will go outside in the middle of the night when it's the only time I can be outside and up, and there aren't people outside everywhere. Because I live in Brooklyn, where it's a goddamn block party outside every day. One of the famous funerals that got broken up by the cops was 500 yards from my house. So I have to wait till midnight if I want to be able to, like, walk and be completely safe. And I'm still doing that in, like, a mask. Because, like, I live on Ocean Parkway in Brooklyn, where, like, if I try to walk the walkway of Ocean Parkway, it's like Frogger with the number of people just standing around or sitting doing nothing in the middle of the night. And these are people with homes. I'm talking about homeless people. I wouldn't get mad about them. They have nowhere to go. I'm talking about just like random people just hanging out all the time, all night outside in the epicenter of the planet of disease.
Yeah, that's been quite the fact that people don't get it is really been concerning on my end too. Like I see a bunch of people like every day at 7 o'clock, they have no problem clapping their hands for the medical staff and, hey, good job. And then it's like, well, let's go out for a walk. Like, no, like that's not how this is supposed to be working.
Yeah, like if I'm going for a walk, I'm doing it middle of the night alone with a mask on and I'm not getting within 20 feet of anyone.
Yeah, I mean, it's been tough. I know. I mean, living in New York City during this time has really made me scratch my head of why I'm here in the first place. And normally I'm like that, but like this is like people just don't get it. They don't understand social distancing ever. And like now it's like you go to the grocery store. Oh my God. It's like if someone needs something that you're standing by, they don't care. They just plow through and grab it. It's very frustrating.
Yeah. Well, you know, people feel entitled to be dicks about things a lot. And, you know, like when this started, when this whole quarantine started, it was still technically winter, beginning of March, which made it all the more confusing why the ice cream man was passing my house every day and still is passing my house all the time. And, like, people are quarantining. People are staying in their houses on my block, but their children are still converging around an ice cream truck and then going back to their houses.
Yeah, I've heard the ice cream man too. Yeah, I've heard the ice cream man too, and I've kind of like, yeah, I mean, it was mid-March and 43 degrees outside, and I hear the chimes coming down the street, and like, of all times of the year and all times in modern history, why is there an ice cream man?
I guess opportunism.
I guess.
I'm saying this counts as food delivery. I don't know, man. I just know that, like, I see so many people that are, like, letting their kids just play with each other and then going back to their own houses. And I'm like, well, what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, it's
well, been... we have a problem in this country of, like, you really couldn't have picked in some ways a worse time in history for this to happen when you have a minimum of sense of community in the country and a maximum of just flagrant ignorant narcissism of just people who don't believe in anything, people who, where, like, I would say more than 50% of the U.S. population believes they might be the top 1% of intelligence.
Interesting. That's a
It's called the Dunning-Kruger effect. The dumber you are, the less capable you are of understanding that you're not a genius.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. I mean, I was going to bring that up with you because I know you like to dabble in the world of politics and, you know, what's going on in the social classes. But that's a great point is, like, everybody just, there's people who just don't get it. Like, it's one extreme or the other. The pendulum that swings on everything these days, but, like, especially this, it was like, even myself, I'll be the first one to admit, you know, when this first started, I was panicked. I'm like, oh, we're all going to die. It's unstoppable. And then, like, to make myself feel better, I was like, nah, it's all a hoax. Don't trust the media. Don't do that. The media controls you by keeping you afraid. And, like, I still believe that, but, like, you know, the truth lies in the middle somewhere. Like, hey, what?
The truth of it is the media was being blamed for panicking people, and they were doing the opposite. They were not panicking people enough, because maybe if they had, those people would have stayed home, and they didn't. So the people trying to blame the media for panic are the worst hypocrites right now, because they're the ones who are basically just saying they're doing the same thing everyone does. They're trying to curate their own reality and say, I'm going to believe what I want to believe to make myself feel better. And that's worked for a long time. It's how Trump became president. But now, for the first time, we're really seeing a real-world example of something that happens quickly enough to prove them liars. Because with climate change, they know they'll be dead before everyone finds out they were lying and crippling the future. This time, it's like 2 weeks. That's what's really happening. And like I said, when this happened the worst possible time, it happened at a time when we had a president whose entire coalition, his entire philosophy is about taking advantage of the stupid, is about taking advantage of low income, low information people. And, you know, as he said, he loves the poorly educated. That's his whole plan. So that's why right now he is on Twitter screaming to liberate all the places that are under quarantine, because he's just gauging what are the people dumb enough to believe me want to hear.
Have you been watching his press conferences, those circuses? Have you been tuning into that, or is it too much for you to handle?
It's too boring for me to handle. Like, I'm not going to waste that much time watching him do a rally every day pretending it's about the coronavirus. I can just read and see clips of things that he said later and just, you know, see the transcript and go through it a lot faster than he can say it, because it's not like it's – the thing is, most of us, we don't even have to watch it. We know what he's going to say because he's extremely predictable. Like, I knew before he said it that he was going to claim that New York was making up the number of people who died, when obviously it's much more people than we think, because no one can even get tested. And because he doesn't want the numbers to go up, he's all of a sudden, when at first he said everyone who wants a test is going to get tested, now he's saying that's, quote, never going to happen, because he has gotten to the point in this where he's saying, I can't mitigate how many people die. I'm moving on to denying tests so I can pretend they didn't. So he's just, now his whole plan is saying, get less people get tested, the less numbers there are, the better I look. That's the whole plan.
Yeah. Well,
it's a fairly simple one, but he's a fairly simple guy.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I've always said, being uninformed is a bad look, and I never wanted to be, you know, one of the uneducated or not know what was going on. But geez, ignorance is bliss sometimes when you're dealing with what's going on. It's like, I just watching the leaders, I'll just leave it at the leaders of our country, of our state, of our city, just kind of fumble around through this. And I get it. There's no answers. Like, nobody has answers. This is unprecedented, but
this is a very difficult situation. This isn't a very hard thing for people to deal with. It's a new situation. I see a lot of people doing things wrong, but most people seem to be acting responsibly. The governors of New York and New Jersey seem to be. It's the president who is making things much worse by, as we all warned, he can't pull himself together no matter how big a crisis. And this is exactly what Jeb Bush talked about. He's made of chaos, not because he wants to be. It's all he's capable of. He's only capable of winging it and using instinct and just being a dumb guy on a bar stool just talking out of his ass. He can't pull himself together even now. So that's why he won't stop lying. He won't stop making things up in the moment, because he's just addicted to attention. And he's obviously mentally ill. And you're seeing that in, and let's be clear here, let's be honest, we haven't seen a single Democratic governor acting with the kind of insane irresponsibility that we're seeing in Georgia and Florida. Florida opened their beaches today. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Florida reopened their beaches today.
Wow. I knew about Georgia. I heard, you know, I saw that about a couple weeks ago when the governor said that he just found out that you could be asymptomatic.
Right. We're showing this is what happens when you build an entire culture around hatred of science. This is what happens. This is exactly what we've been warning about for decades, about this growing anti-intellectualism.
Yeah. This is like the scene in those movies, you know, the alien movies, where the nerdy guy comes running in out of breath with a bunch of papers and he slams it down on the table and he says, hey, everybody, if we don't act now, the Earth's going to be destroyed in 2 weeks. And all the businessmen and governors and senators are standing around and they just laugh them out of the room. That's literally happening right now.
We have never been in a situation that was more exactly the first 20 minutes of Jaws.
Yeah.
This is the exact opening of Jaws. And Fauci is standing there saying, oh, we got to close the beaches. And he's like, it's summer. And Trump's like, it's summer. You know, and that's exactly what's happening. You know, you can't spend your whole life hating people who use objective reality and then just snap back to reality when you need to. You know, these are people who, you know, Trump fans exist because there are so many people who are willing to let their emotions override their observation. And emotional people hate scientists. They despise, one, the idea that there is a quantitative way of proving you're smarter than someone. But moreover, just they just don't like the idea that facts can't be manipulated according to what you want them to be. And they can't. And we've been, Democrats, you know, have been crippled by our sense of nuance for decades because we don't have the same capacity for just oversimplifying things. And this is what happens when you do oversimplify things. You have North Korea basically being fine because they acted like adults, and we have a country full of people who want to go protest in front of the governor because Trump is encouraging them to resist and not believe the scientists. You have the same conspiriologists who took a break from trying to hire women to say that Robert Mueller raped them, which is, you know, there's a great documentary about that when they did that, and now they're just going back and saying, oh, Anthony Fauci's a liar and he's deep state. And actually, all people with degrees are deep state. Anyone who's there to do a job and not because Trump gave them something in exchange for a donation is deep state now.
Yeah, that's you know, that's I'm glad you bring that up because you know me, I always question everything, and you know, I listen to conspiracy theories. I like to see the other sides of points, but that's the whole thing that you're saying is like I want to know what other people are saying. Like, just because you said it doesn't mean it's true. So it's like, okay, what's the other side of the story? And then I have to use my own logic to kind of find the truth in the middle. And I find the truth in the middle, and then it's like, well, if you can, you know.
The problem is the truth is not in the middle between scientists and QAnon. You have one side that uses objective reality and another side that is simply an industry of lying. And you have to understand the conspiracy theorists take advantage of that instinct to be egalitarian or to be fair. They take advantage of that by simply throwing out enough lies that they hope one gets through. And in fact, a very common fake argument, bullshit argument that comes out of the conspiracy theory world is, well, is it even, how can you possibly think all of these theories are untrue? Which is the same logic as saying, how can you read an issue of the Avengers and not believe that any one of these people is really alive? It's an industry of lying. And people like Alex Jones have spent their lives taking advantage of the confused. And mostly, his bread and butter is undiagnosed schizophrenics. Because I've known many people with schizophrenia who start falling into conspiracy theories and have acknowledged that when they start taking medication for schizophrenia, their theories immediately evaporate. And because I've done a lot of work with conspiracy people and learning about it and stuff and interviewing them. It's just something a very odd correlation I've seen. It's really just a measure of being bored. Being bored or being of a diminished capacity. Or just being irresponsible and lying to people because you want the world to be more interesting. I mean, I was a conspiracy theorist when I was like 19 because I was learning. And once I learned enough about it, I was like, oh my God, this is just a culture of liars, of people making things up to get attention. And that's all it ever was. And you have to understand that conspiracy theorists right this moment have never been less relevant and have never been more desperate for attention. Because if they can't use a pandemic to quote-unquote prove their theories, it really, everything else will fall apart. because they, more than anything, conspiracy theorists can never believe any major event is real, especially one that scares them. Because what they're really doing is they're applying an artificial sense of order to a chaotic world. And as long as you believe that everything's under control, nothing's really that scary. Because it means that the world is actually a utopia with like one guy ruining it. And if you just get rid of that one guy, everything will be perfect. The world's not that way. The world is scary and random and violent.
Yeah.
And weak people can't handle that.
No, that's a very good point, because that's what I've always said about, you know, the conspiracy theorists that, you know, believe everything is a false flag and everything is made up by the government or the shadow government and everything. It's like, so you're telling me that you don't believe in bad people, like that sometimes people just take a gun and kill a bunch of people. Like, why does everything have to be a plan?
And because they're scared.
Yeah, that's a, I mean, that's a very
little scaredy cats who want to make up a fake world that makes them feel better about themselves.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. And it kind of ruins the fun of looking into conspiracy theories for me, Dave. Thanks a lot.
I mean, it shouldn't ruin the fun. I mean, you should be looking at it with hatred. You should be looking at it the way that, like, you watch wrestling heels. These are people who need to be destroyed because, not physically, but they're... The voice they have, you need, they rely on you getting bored and annoyed with them and leaving them alone.
Yeah.
And the same thing of Trump fatigue, about how he just says, well, if I lie 40 times a year, it makes a certain number of people say Trump's a liar. But if I lie 4,000 times a year, the same number of people think I'm a liar, but all those other people are going to believe me. Like, it's the idea that, like, you just, what, why slow down? You are, once you hit the wall, that's when you can just do it forever and there's no more of a consequence. And, you know, I've known conspiracy theory people. I've had conversations with them. I have never spoken to one who made sense. I've never spoken to one who could have a rational discussion about these things without dipping into something ridiculous or clearly dishonest. I mean, I know people who have, like, I've had conversations with people who are, like, flat earthers. And the funny thing about conspiracy people, this is what I've learned in my interviews with them. If you look up, even on my, like, my Brick Stone sites, I have one where I interview a bunch of conspiracy theorists. Whenever you hear a reasonable theory, here's what you have a responsibility to do. Find out who originated the theory and then look up what else they believe. You know about the 5G conspiracy, right?
No.
The belief that 5G cell phone towers are actually what's making people sick, not a disease, and that it was revealed to us on the new 20-pound note in Britain. Because as you know, when evil shadow organizations want to hurt a bunch of people, the most important thing is that they spend a lot of time making sure they leave us clues.
Yeah, the clues, that always got me. Like, if the Illuminati was so real, and it was like, why are they leaving us clues and hints and to, like, let us know, like, what they're actually doing? If they were so secretive and so diabolical, wouldn't that all just be a mislead anyway?
Yes, it would. But these are people who are so disconnected from reality, they think that real world villains act like Batman villains. And there has never been a case of someone leaving a purposeful clue in, like, world history of crime. No one has ever left an obvious clue to tell you who they are in crime. It just doesn't exist. It's in the minds of people who can't wrap their heads around reality. So they make this cartoonish, like, it's like a spy novel written by your grandma. Like, that's the level of complexity of the world they live in, that they think exists. And, like, so the 5G conspiracy, you know, it seems to have originated with David Icke. Do you know who David Icke is?
No, please go on.
He's the guy who invented the conspiracy that all rich people are lizards.
Oh, yeah, okay. Now I buy into that one. I'm kidding.
But that's my point, is that, like, there's a lot of people who would find that conspiracy ridiculous, but they're listening to the 5G one because it's new and it fills all these little gaps in their minds of what they need the world to be. So, like, it's like, yeah, now that you know that the same guy who couldn't get his lizard people theory to catch fire now has moved on to cell phone towers. It's like, do you get what's happening here now? Do you understand
where
these ideas are coming from?
Yeah, you know, like Stan Lee didn't, you know, he had some losers too in the comic world. You know, they weren't all the X-Men.
Yeah, exactly. Ever hear Ravager?
Neither did you. Anyways, I mean, kind of pivoting into more of the comedy world, we just talked about all this stuff, and because of your history as Brick Stone and you writing for Triumph, the Insult Comic Dog, have you kind of revisited those two outlets during this time while you're stuck at home, or are you just kind of, or are you not allowed to say?
Oh, well, Triumph is, I mean, we've never stopped with Triumph stuff. We still have other stuff. There's going to be things coming out of Triumph. We had that podcast. We're going to have something else coming out fairly soon that will be advertised. I shouldn't say exactly, but yes, there will be more Triumph stuff coming out. I mean, Brickstone, though, I mean, there's really no... Brickstone was always a hard thing for me to do because there's an enormous amount of work involved in travel, in preparation, so like it was always just really difficult with the other stuff I'm doing to do Brickstone videos, and now obviously they're impossible, so it's not, that's going to be a little while before anything like that happens. But Triumph stuff, you will see more coming out.
Well, good, that's always a pleasure. But so, as I alluded to earlier in the podcast, or should I say you did, you had mentioned the RZA and the Beastie Boys, and I said that that would be a little foreshadowing. Dave, for those who don't know, Dave and I actually have a unique connection where I feel like you're the only person I know when I met you who are already a fan of R.A. the Rugged Man, who is a legendary underground MC.
Yes, I've always been a huge fan of Ari the Rugged Man's music.
Yes, so it was nice. I think that's the reason why me and you actually started talking. I was like, oh, you're a fan? And then we started bullshitting. But fittingly enough, his latest album just released today. All My Heroes Are Dead just was released April 17th. Have you had a time or a chance to listen to any of it?
No, not yet. And I will listen, and I'll see how much of it I like. Because like I love his music, but he has consistently disappointed me with some of his, let's say, gullibility when it comes to political stories.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about that.
He's never found a conspiracy that was beneath him, it seems like. And I really like the guy. I really, really love his music. I think he's a real genius. It's just easy for people who don't try hard enough to get fooled by stuff.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that questions everything and also believes that the government is out to, you know, they don't care about you. And I kind of, and you know, I will say, even talking to you, I do lean a little bit that way of the, you know, like don't believe everything you're told kind of thing. Now I'm also not going out and saying that cell phone towers are making us sick, but you know, I do lean a little bit of the, hey, don't believe what you're told kind of thing. But as a, just purely as an MC, he's, I think, one of the best to ever do it.
Yeah.
From what I've heard of his new album,
he's one of the best
really
rappers
good.
Ever. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really, really, really good. I haven't had a chance to listen to the whole thing. That's actually what I'm going to do when we get off with this podcast, is listen to that. But what I was going to say about it is, it is interesting with him because he's been around for a long time, and he has said some pretty foul and crass shit, especially about women. And you know, in 1995, that was fine. No one cared. But nowadays you can't go around saying some of the shit that he used to say, but he's grown as a human, and he's got a couple songs that I've heard, cause now he's got a, you know, got two kids. One's a daughter. He was actually he lives in Germany. He was doing a feminism march, which he was so out of place, but I at least give him credit for trying and growing as a human being. So I think that was interesting, because that was something me and you were talking about before, of how he would say some stuff and be like, dude, you can't say that.
But, yeah, I mean, I really love his music, and I always have. He's, you know, very important to me in that way. But obviously I can't let that violate my most important like beliefs, you know. And so like I completely cut him off on my social media wise. I unfollowed him on everything when he started pushing this, and this was years ago when this was still an argument, when he started pushing like a very heavily anti-gay message, and I'm not from him, he was supporting other rappers who were doing some of the most like insanely homophobic things I've ever heard in modern rap, and like for rap even. And I was just like, yeah, I can't defend this. You know, I mean, I remember like when he, like in 2008, when he was suddenly like a giant Sarah Palin fan, and I'm just like, how do you not see through this? Like, how can you be this good at rapping and this gullible politically?
Maybe there's a correlation there that we don't see, but that is yeah. But well, that's an interesting point, and you know, I don't want to get off too much on another rant here, but where do you draw the line? And you know, because as a comedian, as a rapper, as an artist, you know, where do you draw the line of like, hey, you have a right to try to say anything you want to say if you're trying to do it artistically, you know, especially in the comedy world. You know, there's some comics that say some reckless shit. I mean, Dave Chappelle said we should be saying some reckless shit. Where do you draw the line at the, okay, well, you tried, you failed, and now it just comes across as hate?
I mean, it's very important to not just be knee-jerk about these things and actually read and listen and give and look at the meaning of what people are saying before you immediately discount it. But at the same time, you have to be willing to walk away when someone is absolutely violating what you know is right and wrong. And, you know, if I think that you should allow nuance, and you should be responsible in saying, well, what did this person really say? Not what did someone else tell me the meaning of what they said was. Like, I've seen so many articles where like a comedian or a TV show or a musician will be like, I've seen so many articles where they'll say, this person said something very terrible, and this person said something that was, you know, unforgivably, and it was bigoted or something. And then the article won't tell you what it was. And that's like unbelievably suspicious. It's like, how can you tell people to condemn something if you won't even let them know what they're condemning it for? So like you have to have your own mind about this. You have to be rational. You have to take the time to parse things out. But yeah, if someone is out there saying things that you know are wrong, even in a funny way, you kind of have to walk away.
Do you think that the fact that we live in a world where everything is now conveyed in 60-second clips or 120 characters kind of, you know, makes that hard to do?
It does make it hard to do, but you should still do it because it's not that hard. It's just not fun. And if you want to have that righteous feeling that you're destroying an evil person to give yourself that sense of moral superiority, yeah, you have to find out exactly what they really said first. Way too many people whose job it is to comment on things, people whose entire income is about their like podcast or something, will still go on hour-long rants about something they spent 5 seconds learning about because they know that you get more of an advantage from just being clear in your outrage than being nuanced. But you're chipping away at your own soul doing that. You're chipping away at like what makes you respectable. You know, I mean, we saw that, like, there have been famous cases of that where someone, you know, he starts condemning someone not even knowing the whole story, and we forgive it because they're like, well, that's all I knew. You know, Trump uses that constantly. He's constantly saying things that aren't true, and they say, well, that's what I heard. Well, I have to check that things are true. Like, he's done that a lot. You know, like when Trump tweeted that 90% of homicides of white people are done by black people. Bill O'Reilly said, why would you say that? That's not true. And he was like, oh, what, I have to fact check everything? It's like, yeah, you fucking do, idiot.
Yeah, we learned that when we were writing papers in school, in high school. You learned that writing papers.
Like, the president of the United States should not be using the excuse of, I should be able to say any lie by just saying, well, if anyone ever said it to me, which half the time they didn't, it means I have no responsibility for repeating it.
Yeah, once it's presented into the universe, it now is a sense of truth. And that is a dangerous, dangerous world to live in.
Yeah, I mean, why do you think so many people like him? Because he makes them feel like, oh, it's okay that this is how I live my life. It's okay that I'm a liar. It's okay that I'm, you know, just a toxic person, or that I've, you know, that I have this jealousy, or that this flagrant materialism. It's just they think of him like a shield against every negative instinct, everything they've ever been told to feel bad about themselves for doing.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate thing, and you know, hopefully a lot of things will change in the next couple months. And by that I mean, you know, the social distancing, the pandemic, the leadership of this country. But you know, I don't want to get too much into a political rant, as this is a comedy podcast. But you know, I mean,
it is.
Yeah, I mean, but Dave, that's why I have you on here, because this is your realm.
Let's be funny now.
This is your realm. And you make a lot of, I mean, that is your comedy bits, right? I mean, would you consider yourself a political comic?
Well, no, because my stand-up's not really political.
Yeah.
I just happen to be a correspondent on a lot of political shows because it's something I'm interested in. And, you know, my stand-up is not like, I tell a story when I met Trump, but no, that's not the kind of stand-up I want to do though. It's not, and the professional comedy I do is usually not related to politics, so I wouldn't say that.
Well, there you go.
I just like talking about this stuff because I wish more people would.
Well, have you ever thought about changing up your stand-up into a more political arena, or do you like kind of keeping it separate?
I don't want to be a guy who does like the rally shows, and I don't want to be like an applause comic. I don't want to do jokes that are about people agreeing with me. You see too much of that. People who are just like, I'm not getting as many laughs as I want, but if I can get them to agree with me, that's enough. It just doesn't really excite me getting on stage and doing Mitch McConnell jokes, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the idea of the word excitement and Mitch McConnell in the same sentence is kind of ridiculous in itself. So there you go.
Yeah. It's like, you know, when I was at SNL, I wrote a lot for the, like the cold opens. I had a lot of jokes in those, and that's those kind of jokes, but that's where they belong. I feel like they belong there more than they belong in stand up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I tend to agree with you on that. You know, I grew up watching Dennis Miller and Bill Maher, and I wasn't even smart enough to know what they were talking about, but I was kind of like, it kind of made me want to learn. Like, it actually, you know, reading Al Franken's book was like, I don't know, Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them.
And yeah, that one was good. Yeah. His best book, though, was Why Not Me, the fiction one.
Yeah. But like, yeah, so like when I would listen to these comics, I would like, it would actually make me want to seek out knowledge so I could understand the joke, which I don't know if it is a common thing that most people do. I think people might just laugh at it and just go with it. But like, I was like, oh man, that was a really funny joke. Too bad I don't know who the hell he's talking about. And then I would go and do research and find out like, oh, well, that makes a lot of sense. Now that joke is actually way funnier now that I know what you're talking about. And I attribute comedy to being learning things about the world, which is, I think it's kind of a reverse thing for most people, but I don't know, who knows?
Yes. Well, usually with Dennis Miller, the more you know about the reference, the less funny it is. But even so, it's good that anyone who wants to learn something is being encouraged to, because a lot of people just don't. They don't look up anything. They talk about stories and they share stories and they're reading them. They look at things and just, they believe whatever's the most sensationalistic and most fun to believe. And it's like, you know what? And the problem is when people say like, it's hard to know which is real. It's not. It's never hard. It takes you 5 goddamn minutes of Googling to find out if a story's real or not.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, it really does. I mean, you just got to like make sure that at least 2 to 3 people are saying the same thing, and then you have a pretty good idea. Not saying you have to believe it completely, but you got a pretty good idea that, okay, that seems to be accurate.
Yeah, it's not hard. You know, when you look at like how many right-wing sites just make up stories and then have dead links to show their attribution, you realize how easy it is to figure out who's lying.
Yeah. Yeah, you can kind of get a good idea of, you know, what's what. Like I've said in this episode previously, you know, the truth lies usually somewhere in the middle, not exactly the middle as you said, but you know, it usually, you take the pendulum swings from this way to that way and somewhere in between.
Well, it depends on the middle of what.
Yeah,
it's not in the middle between CNN and Alex Jones.
Yeah, it's true. That is true.
It's more like in the middle between CNN and NPR.
Yeah. That's a good point. The middle of what is very
actually,
good.
To be perfectly honest, it's NPR. It's just NPR. You show me when the last time NPR was caught lying about something.
Yeah.
You know why? Because they don't care about being interesting.
Oh, that's for sure. That is absolutely
they have the
sure.
bravery to be boring as fuck.
Well, that's something I learned as a, you know, I have a journalism degree, and that's something that I learned from a professor that was fantastic. He said, news is supposed to be boring. You know, like the idea that, I mean, like news is a business and it, you know, they're selling ad space. So the idea of wanting to watch the news, I mean, news is supposed to be boring. And that's something that NPR definitely has embraced, which is good, which is a good thing to do, you know, present the facts and then let everyone else make it an opinion. It's not your opinion hidden as fact. So, but anyway, Dave, I'm going to get you going. I'm sure you have some sort of roast hen or whatever you got cooking in the oven right now. And I enjoy your cooking photos on Instagram. You should do that more often.
I've never been one to post pictures of food. The only reason I put that one up was for the reveal at the end of the Mad Max thing. But right now I'm letting a chicken reach room temperature before putting it in the oven. That's a very important aspect.
There you go. You heard it here first, folks. Let the chicken get room temperature before putting it in the oven. I'm glad you guys listened all the way through all of this nonsense and conspiracy we talk just to get that little tidbit of cooking. But anyway, Dave, thanks for calling in. This is I hope you stay safe. This is a weird and odd time for everybody. So I hope anyone who's listening is also staying safe and, you know, practicing the proper social distancing, washing your hands and whatnot, and just, you know, doing the right thing. So Dave, thanks for calling in.
Thank you,
and, you know, feel free to call in any other time and let us know, keep us updated on the movie. As, like I said, I am excited to see it. So whenever you get a information update on when the movie's going to be released, where we can see it, please let us know. I'm sure there's a lot of people who agree with me who are excited to see the movie The King of Staten Island, coming soon.
I will. Thank you, man.
All right, Dave. Take care of yourself.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the New York Comedy Club podcast. Make sure you like, subscribe, share, and leave a comment. And for tickets to the club, check out newyorkcomedyclub.com.